Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, and this, your second match day pod. This is a big one, ladies and gentlemen. Liverpool, the champions, underneath the lights at St James's Park, and with the spotlight shining squarely on Alexander Isak, Newcastle United's wonderway striker. Not that he was there to see it, of course. Chris Woff and George Culkin were at the match for us this evening, and here they are with some instant reaction.
How the bloody hell do we make sense of that, Chris? Here we are, it's well past midnight. We're standing beneath the Gallagher end at St James's Park, outside. You can hear the noise from the stack. People still seem to be having quite a good time over there. What have we seen? What an incredible match that was. Devastating defeat in lots of ways, but also full of very positive things. You're better at summing things up with a bit of detail, so go on, you make a stab of it.
Well, I mean, Arne Slot himself couldn't really sum it up. He came in his press conference afterwards, the Liverpool manager, and was gushing in his praise of Newcastle, but basically said it's almost impossible to sum up everything that happened. He brought in the atmosphere, the way that both sides played, the physical nature of Newcastle's play. Obviously, there's the red card. There was just a heck of a lot. It's odd as well, because for the first half an hour, as ferocious as it felt, nothing really actually happened. There wasn't, if you go back to the first 30 minutes, there wasn't really an incident. And actually, if I rewind to the first 10 minutes of the match, it was quite surreal, because we were sat in the press box, and in the press box you have little screens which usually shows a replay of just about what's happening on the game. And for the first 10 minutes of the match, for reasons passing understanding, we were actually watching a replay of Wrexham against Sheffield Wednesday.
That confused me for quite a lot of that time. Yeah, I was kind of kept checking down to look at replays of what I've just watched on the pitch, and there was something completely different. So I did think I was going mad. I mean, I know what you're saying about the sort of not a lot happening in that first period, but if you're talking about the tone and the tempo, whether it was the stands, whether it was the war flags display at the start, which, as we expected, was a sort of demonstration of unity, a plea for unity and togetherness, that sort of, reiterating the message that a team is about togetherness and more than one person, very important, set the tone brilliantly. It was a fabulous atmosphere. And yeah, there wasn't a lot in the way of activity in that first minute. I'm only laughing because of so much happened afterwards, but it was a, there was that, not sense of relief perhaps, but just that sense of, the crowd's up for it, the team are up for it. Dan Byrne playing like a man possessed in the first sort of 10 minutes, heading everything, appealing to the crowd after challenges. And yeah, it was a tone setting start to the match.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I also think, I mean, everything obviously surrounding the match, people don't really want us to talk about Alexander Isak, I'm sure, because we've spoken about Alexander Isak so much, but that was the sort of, it wasn't even an undertone going into this match. That was what everything was about. It was in the prism of that. And the Liverpool players came to warm up before the match. They were roundly booed as they came on. Newcastle players were cheered even louder than usual. And as you say, the message of positivity from beforehand with war flags. And it just felt like everyone was ready and sort of united in that sense. And it was... Sorry.
Well, can I just say something? You've just said that about Isak and, the undertone. Was it the undertone? Was it the overtone? Fancy choosing to miss out on that game on that occasion, on that atmosphere. I mean, yeah, of course, he was kind of the story of the night in lots of ways. These two teams, one fighting to keep him, one trying to get him. You know, he's chosen to sit out that atmosphere, that occasion, that sort of magical, incredible atmosphere. One of those great evenings when St James's is that kind of force of nature, it's that primeval sort of feeling. God almighty, it's like, it's incredible. And, you know, like, so, what a daft sod to want to, I mean, I'm not saying he wanted to miss that game, but like, he's chosen to sit it out. It's the stage that he was made for, and yet he deliberately decided not to be there. Just cannot get my head around that.
No, I agree with you, and obviously because he wasn't playing, Newcastle named the side we expected them to, which was unchanged. Yeah. Anthony Gordon, as we're going to come on to in a bit, starts through the middle once more. You've got Barnes on the left, you've got Alanga on the right, and Newcastle early on certainly were trying to get in behind Milos Kerkez. It's something which has been identified, written about a lot in Liverpool's first few matches. There's a space there, and given Alanga's pace, that's what Newcastle tried to do. And without creating too many clear-cut opportunities until a bit of a blitz and around about the 25th minute when Gordon had three chances in quick succession after the ball had already been played back by Alanga and sort of gone under Joe Linton. Could he have done better? We sort of had a debate in the press box as to whether he could have actually got there, but it was hammered him quite hard. But then Gordon, there was a cross from the right, from the left, from Harvey Barnes. Gordon heads it over. There's then a cross low from Alanga from the right, which Gordon gets to, but Alisson manages to make the save. And then there's another sort of harder header. And it looked at that point like Newcastle were really getting on top, and it felt like after the sort of relentless aggression led by Gordon and his pressing in the midfield three of Bruno, Tonali and Joe Linton smothering Liverpool, it felt like maybe the tide was starting to turn Newcastle's way at that stage.
Yeah, I thought Newcastle were on top. I thought they were the better team in the first half. As you know, rightly mentioned, Gordon was the one setting the tone. Pressing was just extraordinary. Yeah, obviously there's a downer to follow because of what he happened, but he has really been, or had really been, a talismanic figure in these first two matches. His attitude has really sort of helped set the tone for the team. Liverpool really struggled to cope with it. I mean, it's always astonishing when you see a team of their calibre, you know, or equivalent Man City, those sorts of teams, on the back foot and reeling when they come to St James's. You know, because they've seen it all and done it all. They're the champions, as Liverpool fans were quick to remind us. But like, Newcastle really just pushed them back, and great to see at that point, which is what makes what happened sort of immediately after that so disappointing.
But before we get on the red card, Liverpool basically out of nowhere score, and it's Ryan Gravenberch, and it's really, and Howe touched on it in his press conference afterwards, and I sort of mentioned it in my immediate piece that I wrote the analysis, that it was the first time where Newcastle weren't quite there immediately in terms of the press from the edge of the box. Gravenberch had a little bit of space in which to work. Bruno tries to come out a little bit late. The shot goes sort of through his legs, takes a slight deflection off Fabian Schär, but anyway, Nick Pope has been wrong-footed essentially, and the ball goes in the back of the net, and that really, it felt like it took the stuffing out of Newcastle for a little bit. And in the, we'll come on the red card in a second, but I just want to talk about the phase of play, or a couple of phases of play beforehand, that Mo Salah breaks and Liverpool break, and Dan Byrne tries to basically take him out in the middle of the pitch. Play continues, the referee waves play on, and then Byrne goes and commits another foul on Salah, which again was from behind, was a little bit reckless, and gets booked for it. But it felt like, and this is maybe applying hindsight to a situation when it's happening, but it felt like maybe at that point Newcastle's aggression, and maybe they just lost focus a little bit and it went a little bit too far. And is that what leads to red card? I say it, I might be putting two and two together making five, but it just felt like things were maybe tipping over the edge at that stage.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really sort of thought about it like that. I mean, I think it was that aggression really that was sort of so impressive. I mean, it's like you're talking about Joe Linton, for example. I mean, he again was sensational until he went off injured. Obviously, we'll come on to talk about that as well. You know, Liverpool couldn't cope with that. When you're playing like that, you're playing on a line. The danger is that you straddle that line or go over it. And that's what happened with Gordon. I mean, when he is running so hard and running so fast, pulling out of a challenge becomes more difficult. If you're on the edge like that, it is the risk you run. And yeah, ultimately Newcastle did pay a price for that. I can't really criticise them though for that sort of attitude, because it was that really that had allowed them to get a grip on the game in the first place.
So the red card itself comes in the 40, well, it comes in added time, essentially at the end of the first half. Virgil van Dijk has the ball, goes to clear it with his left foot. It hesitates a little bit, and I think Gordon believes that he can get to van Dijk. He massively misjudges that fact and sort of jumps to make the tackle, almost 2 feet come off the ground at one stage. He looks to be pulling out of it, but does very much catch Virgil van Dijk, who goes down a heap. Immediately, the Liverpool players surround the referee, really don't like the challenge. Simon Hooper, the referee, initially gives a yellow card, but Virgil van Dijk immediately gestures to show Anthony Gordon that he's got stud marks going down the back of his calf. VAR tell Simon Hooper to go to the pitch side monitor. You know at that stage what's likely to be coming, that he's certainly been told to review it. And then we have the new sensation that we've got this season, which is that you get dodgy audio from the referee trying to explain to you what's happened, and says that it's violent conduct, and then Anthony Gordon is dismissed.
The referee can leave the dodgy audio to put on the time. I mean, I'm not having that.
Well, very much so, a little breaky little audio that we've got there. But anyway, what was your reading of the situation, George? Do you think it was a red card? Do you think it should have been reviewed? Or how do you see it?
Yeah, I think it's a red card. I don't have any complaints about that. I mean, as you say, I think it looks like on the replays that he's trying to pull out of the challenge, but he is going so fast and he's late. Hits him with speed, and if you look at the damage he caused, I think it's very difficult to suggest it should have been any other outcome. I don't think it was malicious, but it was dangerous, it was reckless, and so, you know, I think in those circumstances, no complaints. And at that point, 1-0 down, 10 men against Liverpool with half a match to go, absolutely fearing the worst, it completely sort of sucks the volume out of the crowd, and, you know, totally understandably. And it just felt like this is damaging yourself, it's shooting yourself in the foot after what had been a really, really positive first half, in which Newcastle, I think, you know, would have been no complaints from Liverpool if they'd been losing. And from that point, you're thinking, well, that's that. But, you know, that would be a gross misreading of the kind of quality Newcastle have.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree. There's going to be an ambulance going past, which you can hear in the background. I disagree slightly on the red card, and I do think it is a red card. Did it meet the threshold of him having been a yellow, and then it should be upgraded to red? That's more of a wider point about VAR, but I can't really complain about the decision in general. If you'd given the red card initially, I definitely would have done. But anyway, yeah, he's from Newcastle, going at half time down to 10 men. Immediately, Eddie Howe is trying to sort of set Newcastle up differently. They're coming out with a 4-3-2 formation, essentially, which Harvey Barnes and Anthony Elanga are sort of almost like split strikers, wingers, trying to operate in that front line with still the midfield three. And the plan, clearly, you would have thought, would be, right, try and stay in this game for a little bit. And then after 19 seconds, Newcastle have given the ball away. Cody Gakpo shoots, the ball comes back to him. He then passes it inside to Hugo Ekitike. Wonderful finish from the edge of the area in off the left-hand post. And could that have been a bigger kick in the bollocks for Newcastle than Hugo Ekitike scoring like that?
No. I mean, Newcastle fans have been singing "You just a shit Willa Sula" in the first half. No. I mean, there was just like symbolism all over the place this evening, wasn't there? It was like Isak, you know, not there, the man that both teams want. You've got Hugo Ekitike scoring a goal, one who got away for Newcastle this summer and joins Liverpool, of course. You've then got Gordon, the man who is playing as false number nine in Isak's absence, being sent off. And then, obviously, you've got Willa Sula scoring a goal as well. And, you know, it just felt like there's all these like big symbolic moments. And at that point, they were all, you know, they were all going against Newcastle.
I mean, I'll be honest, I feared for Newcastle. You're just at the start of the second half, Liverpool gone 2-0 up. They're obviously defending champions, and you think that they could well go on from strength to strength from that point. You worry this could be, are Newcastle going to sink here? Is this going to be a point where really the atmosphere turns, not in terms of fans being negative, but just has everyone lost that emotion? Has everyone just expended so much energy that there isn't the comeback that there can be? But as you touched upon previously, that's not how the team works under Eddie Howe. And actually Newcastle really tried and fought their way back into the match, and they went direct a lot. There were a lot of long balls up to Liverpool to try and compete in the box. Dan Byrne was regularly getting in the box, and Newcastle win set piece and free kicks here, corners there. They have this new set piece in their repertoire of a long throw. Last season, they only attempted one long throw in the entire Premier League season, which was Dan Byrne actually trying to launch the ball down the line to quickly launch a counter-attack. They didn't throw it in the box once, whereas Tino Livramento has added this into his armoury, and Newcastle's equaliser indirectly comes from one of those. He throws the ball in the box, comes back out to him, he's on the left-hand side, and he curls a right-footed cross in. And Bruno Guimaraes, who I think summed up that sort of character, that want to get back in the game, he's always going to get ahead of Milos Kirkus and get above him and power that header in. And suddenly that gave Newcastle a lifeline they probably deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you talk about the equaliser, and then that's, you know, that's as direct as they come. I like saying that. I mean, I want to see teams mix things up. I mean, we've talked on the pod before about everybody playing out from the back and teams like playing to a philosophy that doesn't get them results and then sticking with the same philosophy, and I just don't understand it. I'd love seeing teams mix it up a bit, as long as it's done in a, you know, in a purposeful way, and Newcastle certainly did that. They showed that there are other ways of playing. They're very good on the ball when they have the ball, and in the right circumstances they've got players who, you know, who want the ball and use it really well. But when circumstances dictate, don't be afraid to mix things up, try things differently. And they did it, and they did it really well. As you say, they did it with purpose. It wasn't sort of like hit and hope and hope for the best. It was a deliberate tactic. That stat you said there about the one long throw last season it's a great stat. Well done. I'm proud of you for that one. But like, they showed that like there's different ways you can get the ball into the box and cause problems, and they did it. And you could then feel the belief and commitment coming back from the crowd, the way that the team and crowd were sort of working in harmony with each other, and you just suddenly got a sense that the game wasn't over.
Yeah, and yet even then there were still more blows to come, because Sandro Tonali, who rarely leaves the pitch early, he's usually the man who stays on, had suffered. You could see he'd gone down at one stage holding his elbow. It was hard to work out whether he'd dislocated his elbow, dislocated his shoulder, but his arm was sort of limp almost. He was forced off the field. 10 minutes later, Joe Linton is forced off the field. That immediately didn't look good. He had to be consoled by Bruno as he left the pitch. And then Fabian Schär also suffers a head injury, which don't really want to dig out the referee, but somehow that play was allowed to continue for a good 20-30 seconds before it was pulled back. Alisson was even trying to get him on, so he suffered from concussion. So having suffered the blow of already losing Anthony Gordon, by the end of the match, Newcastle have lost four of their starters, two of their centre midfield pillars, who Howe admitted afterwards that they look like genuine injuries. They are concerned.
That's an interesting phrase from Eddie Howe, isn't it? A man who's never knowingly told the truth about any injury. For him to say they're genuine injuries means something. Yeah, big blow, and we'll have to see what happens. I mean, you know, we knew that Newcastle already had work to do in the transfer market before the window closes in a week or so's time. You know, what this does, if anything, we'll have to wait and see. But in the piece that we've written for The Athletic for the morning, sort of talked about that sense that, you know, Newcastle have lost. They've lost a match, they've also lost players, they've also lost Anthony Gordon. But in the way they played and the way they acted, they also showed the mentality of winners. And I hope that's not just me being overly positive, but I just think there was something very, very impressive in the way that they dealt with this adversity. I'm not surprised by that, because they've consistently done it, but particularly in the heightened circumstances about Liverpool, about ESAC, when you're looking, you know, you get that sense that the world's watching on, waiting for them to crumble, or waiting for there to be a kind of fracturing in the dressing room, and they show exactly the opposite. You know, you just wished that they might have got a bit of luck as well, but hopefully that's to come somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I mean, what was positive in one sense was that actually, and we spoke about it before the game, we were sitting in the press box, you look at the bench, and with the massive asterisk of they haven't got a striker, well, they did have one who came on, but they haven't got a senior striker, they actually had options to bring on, and I thought Jacob Ramsey came on, made his debut, added something. Malik Chow, he got his first introduction into the Premier League as well. Then Lewis Miley came on as the sort of deep line number six position. So Newcastle had options there. And then one of them was Willis Sula. And it felt like it was interesting that Eddie Howe didn't immediately bring him on when Anthony Gordon was sent off. And I think that in one sense still shows that he isn't fully trusted. The fact he hasn't started these first two Premier League matches confirms that he hasn't started a Premier League match for Newcastle yet. But Howe does eventually throw him on. And again, there's still elements to his game you look at in his role. But when I mentioned Bruno's desire to get for the header for the opening for Newcastle's first goal, with Willis Sula, he basically gambles and he just keeps continuing his run. And he gets a bit of luck in the sense that the long ball comes forward from Nick Pope. Byrne tries to compete with Konate for it. It ricochets off Konate. And because Sula's shown the willingness and desire to get there, he's in the position. And then really cool finish under Alisson, and you've mentioned the symbolism already of Ekitike. There was symbolism there because that was almost like the player who's been forgotten a little bit here has showed that maybe he can actually offer something.
Yeah, and Newcastle are going to need him, certainly in the short term, you would think so anyway. And yeah, a great moment for him in that circumstance, as you say. Yeah, I mean, he's not being looked at as the answer at the moment, but he came on, showed that he can make a difference, took his chance, that'll do his confidence the world of good. You know, you can see there's a player there, you can see there's something there. He's got great pace, he's got real willingness. One of the first things he did when he came out on the pitch tonight was he did a little trick, and Newcastle lost possession, and he got a talking to from Bruno, and it was like, no, you don't do that now, we're chasing the game, we need to find a way back into that. You know, there's a time and place for anything. And he's got to kind of get that sort of stuff out of his system, keep the ball when you're in a dangerous position like they were, not get rid of it with little fancy flicks. But he shows he's got something. And so, yeah, Newcastle are going to need him. It's a good moment for him.
Just briefly, before we come on to heartbreak, I just want to mention something which I know you enjoyed tonight, which was the football is back because of Jason Tindall's antics were back on the touchline, weren't they?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, it was, I think it was within the first 20 minutes, wasn't it, that Jason Tindall was staring down the Liverpool bench, telling them to shut up, doing yappy, yappy fingers. I don't know how else to describe that. Yappy, yappy fingers, is that right? I can't remember. Doing shush moments as well. It was like, yeah, this is great. You know, Newcastle kind of steamrolling Liverpool or trying to, pressing high, and then you've got Tindall doing that. And it's a kind of great, it's a great sort of answer to part of what we've seen this summer, which is, of course, is, you know, Liverpool trying to flex their muscles, trying to get Alexander Isak out. We know that Liverpool are an exceptional team. We know that they're a bigger club than Newcastle in terms of their infrastructure and the money that they can pay, and in terms of competing for everything right here, right now. That's all of those things are fair to say. I'm not ashamed to say those things. But on the pitch, Newcastle can find a way to compete with these teams, and as we saw at Wembley, beat them. So those moments are always good fun.
And then, unfortunately, in the 110th minute, 16-year-old Rio Nagumoa, I think you say it, I'm not entirely sure, but a lad who turned 17 this weekend comes on. And really, I think I think it's the one moment that you saw that maybe Newcastle fatigue had set in, and finally the man advantage finally told, because Newcastle kept Liverpool so far. Were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, do you think we should all complain to social services and get that goal overturned because it's way past his bedtime?
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you really should be. You should be getting ready for school, though, as a bank holiday. But you should be getting ready for school. But anyway, Newcastle were caught out positionally. There were man down. That was bound to happen at some stage. And unfortunately, it came at that crucial moment. The one bit of real quality Liverpool showed. And what a finish from him. And it sort of broke Newcastle's heart. They got back into the game. They'd fought back from 2-0 down. And then cruel way to lose the match. How do you reflect on the way that it ended?
Yeah, complete sort of devastation. And you're then, you know, obviously you and I were in work mode trying to make sort of sense of it, and knowing that you've got to write something down and hopefully that, you know, produce something that's legible, readable, and provides some kind of information. I'm not sure that we've done that. I'm not sure that we're doing it now, for that matter. But it's very difficult to try and, you know, to try and sum these things up in the moment. Again, I don't want to sort of be a cheerleader. It's 1 point from two games for Newcastle, but it's very difficult to feel disheartened by the way they played, by the way they started the game. Yes, some big moments didn't go their way. Yes, they have to take responsibility for those big moments, but equally, their response to it was so impressive, and impressive in terms of resilience, defiance, all those things, but also in terms of quality. So I am concerned, because they were already needed to bring in a forward player, at least one. Now other players have got injured. You sort of wanted them to get a reward to back up all those qualities that they've shown, and that was a very, very cruel way for them not to do it.
Tino, it felt like a cruel, cruel end there, really, after fought your way back into the game. Just explain your emotions right now.
Yeah, extremely frustrated. We'd done enough to at least draw the game, and we had the momentum, and then yeah, things happened the way that they did, and there's nothing we can do about it now. Just have to take the positives from the game and move forward to Saturday.
I mean, go back to the sort of red card incident and going back down to 10 men, what was the sort of message at half time about how you're going to come back into it? Because obviously then you concede a goal within 19 seconds as well.
There's a few tactical things, but I think when you go down to 10 men, it's just all about your mentality, your togetherness as a team, and we have that in abundance. You can see that today in that second half. We were by far the better team, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think you saw what we can do, but the emotion now is just frustration, but you need to take the positives from it.
I mean, this place is very, feels momentum-based. When the crowd is behind you, and when you do have that flow after Bruno scored, then it feels like you had that advantage. Was that something you could feel out on the pitch, that you did have that momentum?
Yeah, I was just out there enjoying playing football, to be honest with you. Being back at home, it's the first game, I've missed it. So, but yeah, you could definitely feel that. The reaction from the team was top level, so it's definitely something to be proud of.
And obviously, there's been a heck of a lot of noise surrounding the football club, and then I suppose the fans were trying to unite everyone. What's it been like for all the players, given everything that's been going on, and given that it was Liverpool, the sort of crunch match as it was billed?
Nah, it doesn't change anything. We're such a tight-knit group. The gaffer stays on top of that and makes sure that there's no outside influence coming into the changing room. So when I go in every single day, I'm training and I'm playing with my friends, you know what I mean? So there's a great feel around the club, definitely inside right now. We just ignore everything outside.
And you seem to have added long throws to your repertoire this season. It's not something Newcastle seem to have done much of before. Is that something you enjoy doing? That obviously sort of led to the first goal, and then you got the assist as well.
I didn't know that I had it, to be honest with you. I worked on it a bit last season, but with Martin coming in, new sort of like set piece specialist that works with us, he's helped me, and it's something I can add to my game, and like you said, we kind of got the first goal from it. We're playing football well, we're looking like ourselves off the ball, we're aggressive, and we just haven't really got the results to match that, but I'm very proud of the team, the way that everyone reacted, and I feel like just almost sort of an excitement to go into training again and be ready for Saturday.
The other thing that we have to point out is that when the players did finally come off the pitch, they found Yasser Al-Ramayan waiting for them, the chairman of Newcastle. It was his first game here since February, I think you said it was. He was there next to Jamie Rubin and other members of the board, kind of, you know, shaking hands and hugging. And, you know, his presence here is kind of interesting in these very heightened circumstances around the opponents, around Alexander Isak. We'll have to see what kind of fallout there is from that. But, you know, that was definitely not a power play, but that was a kind of message of unity. The game had started with a game of unity from the stands, and it ended with a different sort. You know, when Al-Ramayan is here, there is always a feeling that things happen at Newcastle, or could happen. You know, PIF, we know, is an absolutely enormous institution, and it's very difficult for him to focus on Newcastle United, or give his focus to Newcastle United, but he's here. He has seen what the team can do. He's seen what they're lacking, and I mean,
just on the back of that, just to finish up, there were reports today that Jamie Rubin and Jacobo Solis from the board had met with Alexander Isak today and are trying to resolve that situation. We are yet to confirm whether that is true, but also leading up to the match, Newcastle had a £50 million bid for Wolverhampton Wanderers striker Jorgen Strand Larsen rejected. I am going to say those words again, because I'm still trying to compute myself. £50 million for a player who just signed a couple of weeks ago for £23 million, but Newcastle are in such dire straits in terms of up front. They're desperate to sign a striker. They are trying, and obviously with the plan is that they will come in alongside Alexander Isak. And I will touch upon more of this in our podcast later in the week. This was meant to be a concise pod, but and going forward, a lot of these match ones will be. But I think that given the exceptional circumstances of what has happened tonight and everything around it, this one has gone on for a bit longer. So yes, we are signing off from St. James's Park at 25-1.
Yeah, very mixed feelings. I think I thought it was a great performance from us. It wasn't perfect, of course, but it was very good in the first half, very dominant, very very us, really. High-octane, front-foot football. The only thing missing in that really strong start to the game, or middle period of the first half, was goals. Conceded a poor goal, first time in the game, really, where we're not quite aggressive enough. And then the second half was, of course, a very different game, a very different plan, but really well executed by the players, and despite of the fact that we went 2-0 down and right the second start of the second half, massive challenge for us. So I can't fault the players at all. I thought they gave so much to the game. Absolutely gutted for them that we have nothing to take from it. We've given two great performances, I think, and we've shown our togetherness and unity. We've shown our fighting spirit. We've shown that we have put the distractions around us away. But you'd just like a bigger return to sort of show ourselves and show the rest of the world that that is the case. Sometimes football doesn't give you that, and I do believe, though, you'll get your rewards longer term if you continue to play as we have done. And I think that's what we need to focus on.
Well, there you have it. I am quite frankly knackered after that. A ridiculous and remarkable game of association football tonight. Please look out for our regular midweek pod, when, as well as our usual nonsense, you'll hear from Morgan Gattrat, NUFC Women's double World Cup winning new signing, who's been speaking exclusively at George following her loan from Orlando Pride. Get in touch with us, podonthetine@gmail.com and at Pod on the Tyne on your social media as well. That's it. Thank you very much to George and Chris for being at St. James's Park tonight. Take care, look after yourselves, and from everybody at Pod on the Tyne, goodbye.